mein auf den Supercast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 459. I'm Adam, man. Look at the size of that thing, Doctor. And here's Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
This quote is in honor of Laurie Nix. Just there, an exquisite feathered Gothic. If only I'd brought my net.
Mary Lang.
Boing.
And yes, she's back. Maybe Delrose.
Take the one in the skirt. He's the youngest of the Jacks.
If anybody's a bit worried about what I said there, it's actually Debbie Melrose, but I swapped the syllables.
Which is a crazy thing for him to say.
I created a spoonerism.
He has aged so much.
Have I?
He's the youngest.
Obviously older than Perry.
Of the Jacks, he says. They refer to them as Jacks and Jennies at some point, like with donkeys.
Yeah.
There were so many good quotes to choose from.
Yeah. It was a treasure trove, but that really stuck out and made me laugh, so, yeah.
I had others in mind, but I just had to dedicate that to Laurie after she stumped me 2 days ago. What do you mean? What am I missing here? Hello, we've gone quiet.
Yes, we're being shown a coffee cup.
Are we? Oh, okay.
I'm not on the feed. Should I?
I can't watch the feed because
Adam held up a coffee or teacup that said Blackpool, so I don't know what that's about.
Okay, a bit of a running commentary would help.
Unless he's lost the sound, now he's up and out of his chair, so I don't know what's going on.
Adam, can you hear us? Okay, so basically...
what did you think of the story, Debbie?
Well, actually, I'm trying to remember it. So I think we open with the second Doctor and Jamie in black and white that fades beautifully into colour. discussing where they're off to now. I'm trying to remember how it goes.
Yeah.
Why don't we wait for Master to come back?
And then we go to the TARDIS with a doctor who's going, boing, boing.
And then at some point, people try to eat them. Yay!
And turn a doctor into an andragum.
Oh, that's brilliant. What's going on, Adam?
I don't know. Adam's gone out of his chair. He's not even within hailing distance.
Right. Let's see what's going on. Oh, I think we're being told off the volume.
Okay.
God's sake.
Okay, Adam, we did sort of do the whole thing, so we're done.
Hey! Excellent.
We summarised it all.
We summarised it. Yeah, Mary did really good.
Fantastic. I'm well impressed with that.
Were we in trouble?
What do you mean?
With the Alpha?
No, the immersion's too cold. I just had to turn the thermostat up.
You just vanished, so we were speculating about what was going on.
Well, no, the water when she ran Isabella's bath just went cold quite quickly. So we've had trouble. It's been too hot, so I turned it down. Now it's
a little bit
too
cold.
And now
it's the wrong
way. No, just turned it down too much.
Now Robert, who said he couldn't be on, is responding to messages. So maybe you might want to call him and see if he wants to join us.
Robert? Said, Scooby-Doo, where are you? As if he's expecting to be on.
Who, Robert?
But he sent feedback.
Things I have to put up with.
Yeah, you have to put up with us.
No, he's referring to Adam not being there.
We're enough.
Oh, okay.
Enough a handful.
Well, now you're going to get me into trouble because I'm just calling him. Anyway. So this week we were going to talk about the two doctors, but thankfully it's already done. We can move straight on to feedback.
Yeah, we've already done it. We're done.
Okay. Or can I say what I thought of it?
Let's just get on with the review. How about that?
Hang on, you just said you'd already done it.
Yeah, but your review's always better and more detailed.
Teasing you.
Oh God.
Yeah, like we'd get the whole thing done in a few minutes.
Well, you might have put Kirby on mute for 5 minutes.
Normally, 5 minutes to an hour. We just did it in 5 minutes.
That's what she said. No comments coming through, so our fans can't be bothered to comment on the live feed. I give up. I'm not bothered doing a live feed. People can't be bothered to comment. Oh, we have got comments. Right. Yeah, this is ridiculous. I'm just going to click on this, which is then going to play the video.
It's always better.
Hang on. Ah, right. Hang on.
Yeah, like we'd get the whole thing done in a few minutes.
You might have put on mute for
Facebook issues. There we go. Yeah, basically, this is ridiculous. I have to get to see the live comments. I now have to open up another video feed of a delayed version of myself. What have we got coming through? We've got Lillian Robin or somebody. Lillian Robin says hi. Terry Mar says hi, everybody. Laurie Nick says, hello, everybody. Hope you are having a great Sunday. No, it's like the same comment, just slightly getting longer on each line. Laurie Nick said, ooh, and then she had a little emoji of me. Oh, no, sorry, it's a heart sort of emoji thingy. And then she says, I will continue to tease the pedant. I wonder who that could be. Terry Miles says, Adam has gone for a cuppa. I do actually have a cuppa, funny enough, in my Blackpool mug. I took too big a gulp. Lillian Robbins says, what is going on? Where's Adam? I'm here. What's the matter with her? That's about it, really. I can get on with the show.
We've tried to fill in, but we're not patched on you.
So this is a long story, Kirby. So please don't slow things down. I've got an episode of Murder on CCTV in the can, waiting to watch after this. Neil James says, "Look at the size of that thing, Doctor. Are my flies undone? I've got my shorts on today. Shouldn't be an issue." So the episode begins with in black and white. And then the substantially older looking second doctor and Jamie trying to still pass himself off as a teenager, which is quite amusing, as I found later on in the story. They're having a bit of an issue with the TARDIS.
Failing miserably at it.
Now, one thing really did sort of annoy me about this scene, and that is they're implying they've just dropped Victoria off. And everybody knows that the Doctor didn't even mention the Time Lords until the War Games. And nobody knew he was a Time Lord until the War Games. Yet he's quite brazenly telling Jamie that he's got a communication from the Time Lords.
Wibbly-wobbly-timey-wimey.
Now, this may have worked in my mind.
This is obviously season 16. It can't be.
It could have been if they hadn't mentioned they dropped Victoria off. But they just mentioned they dropped Victoria off. So it can't possibly be the season you're referring to.
They went back for Victoria.
They went back for Victoria.
Obviously, they spent a very, very long time in order to get substantially
older. Excuse me, we forgot someone.
Who?
Ian.
Oh, yeah, but I didn't know. I didn't get a thing to say that Ian was coming on.
He said he might be on, so yeah. He's ready and waiting.
Oh, good. Well, that's all right, then.
I do beg your pardon. We might have to start the whole thing again.
No, we won't. we haven't started the episode yet.
Yeah. There's plenty.
Yes, anyway. Ian?
Yeah.
Sorry about that. I didn't know you were on. It's Kirby's fault.
No, said he might not be on.
No, it's Kirby's fault.
No. It's actually my fault, because I was sitting there going, they haven't called me, and I'm like, oh, I did say maybe. I'm here. Yeah, it's right. That's probably why.
Don't worry, it's fault. Kirby's fault officially. He has the T-shirt.
I spotted it, so you're here.
So let's do the introduction then. And Ian Bissett.
Well, if it would please you, I'll take the one in the skirt.
Good one. That's one that nobody else did.
Someone used that one already.
No, they didn't.
What?
I used the second skirt quote.
Oh, okay.
It is the first one that Ian's referring to. There's a couple of skirt quotes.
Don't worry, Ian. We haven't got very far. We've just got to the bit of me moaning about
Adam for a bit as well. We couldn't find him.
Oh, shut up. Anyway, we just got up to the bit where I'm moaning about the fact that the second Doctor has brazenly mentioned to Jamie about the Time Lords when. We all know that didn't happen until after, in the War Games. But he's also mentioned they've just dropped off Victoria, which implies this is set just after the dropping off of Victoria. And now Kirby's trying to claim the season 6 point whatever theory, which I don't think works in this particular instance.
Yes, of course it works.
Yeah.
Okay, if you two say it works, I don't believe it. Anyway, right then.
The Doctor became basically a time agent, did he not? And
And for anyone who thinks is saying, oh, why doesn't he reference all this stuff later? We already saw in the most recent series that the Time Lords can erase memories.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough. I'll let you have that one. Anyway, so they
thank you, sir. May I have
shut up.
Plus, it's a science fiction TV show.
Yeah, that too.
Exactly. That's usually a good excuse. Mm.
They arrive in a rather filthy-looking kitchen with an absolute bonkers chef who reminds me a little bit of John Paul Thingamajig. What's his name again? He owns a hotel that's part of the that network of hotels that New Holmwood's part of. Best Western. He's a chef. Oh, right, I give up. I can't remember. He's sort of got a French name, but not, and he's not that French one we're talking about. I'm hoping that somebody will actually help me out here, Debbie Melrose.
I don't know.
You're not known any TV chefs.
I don't know what you're talking about either.
Yeah, I don't know
who you're talking about.
I'm in Port Charlotte.
I've stayed in a Best Western hotel either.
No. There's only one Best Western.
You're looking for help amongst a bunch of Luddites here.
It was last week.
Yeah. All right, well, he looks like a well-known mad chef, a mad TV chef from Great Britain. It's Shock Eye, who needs to shave his eyebrows a tad. And of course,
and he ought to be more careful with his breakfast cereal. He keeps getting Rice Krispies on his face.
I know.
Yeah, he does. I think that's all
they had at the BBC canteen, because they show a lot of monsters like getting at the BBC canteen.
There's also a nice balance between his sort of trousers and Jamie's kilt. So quite a similarity between the two there. Anyway, the Doctor rather cunningly arms himself with a cucumber.
Yes.
That's a great move.
Yeah.
They do scare cats quite well, so, you know.
Because they've called what was I going to say about the cucumber? Oh, yeah, that's right, because they're actually there to see Dastari. I'm just scratching my neck with my wand.
Which is an anagram of anybody? Anybody?
Gourmand.
What?
No, Dastari is
Dastari?
An anagram of a TARDIS.
Yep.
Oh,
okay.
Ooh.
Andrigram is an anagram.
Andrigram is a Gourmand, yeah.
It's what?
See, that's how you do it.
Yes. Anyway, so I'm moving this without a fast forward button. This is very difficult. Shockeye, they do sort of leave the kitchen, the Doctor and Jamie, much to Shockeye's annoyance, and a chicken gets...
he wants to cook the young one.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they wander through a corridor, and then we meet Giacini, who is played in exactly the same way as her character in Blake's Seven.
Absolutely.
Yep.
She plays in everything.
Yeah, and she obviously, only difference being she's got a wig. And she had very short cropped hair in Blake 7. She's a very good friend of Shockeye. And then the Doctor and what's his name again? Jamie, that's the one. Have a chat with Dastari, who looks very similar to one of the cowboys in the gunfighters we watched.
The gunfighters, yes, I wonder why.
Shocking resemblance. Only this, he didn't have those glasses on.
And also a resemblance to Morix and Leisure Hive.
No, also who he reminds me of, that bloke from the Buggles.
Yes, I already posted a link to that.
Oh, you would have done, Kirby, wouldn't you?
Video.
Yeah. Anyway, so he's a little bit of a lunatic, this Dastari. He's trying to sort of augment sort of cannibalistic creatures into geniuses. Brilliant idea. So that's what he's done with Giacini, who is in fact an androgyn, but she's being...
Master, what? Do they eat each other? If they don't eat each other, they're not cannibalistic.
Oh, good point.
I'm assuming that they do because...
It does sound like they do.
They do have that discussion about humans not eating their own meat.
Good
and
point.
He finds that really, really odd.
Yeah, he finds that a bit tragedy because of all the goodness. Yeah.
So like, basically, why wouldn't you try your own?
You're saying it in a lot of words there, but the shortest words are Adam's right. That's all it needs to be.
Yes.
That covers that rather well.
You always are.
Right, you know.
Yeah, thank you very much. Anyway, there's a graphic. There's this graphic of the Sontaran ships arriving. I was quite impressed with
the tallest Sontarans in the universe.
No, he's talking about the ships themselves.
The ships.
I was referring to the Sontarans.
Well, we haven't seen them yet.
Right.
I didn't.
With the Sontaran ships that I love is that the Sontaran ships have remained consistent throughout all of Doctor Who.
That's
it. Unlike the Sontarans themselves.
I can tell you're not very hype about that, Debbie, about the tall Sontarans.
What?
You're not happy about the tall Sontaran, are you?
I was perplexed. I wasn't not happy.
I'm not happy about the tall Sontarans.
I'm like a six-footer, and I've sort of... All I can remember is them being short and stumpy, potatoes.
Obviously, I know how tall the Sontarans are supposed to be. In fact, you know how tall the Sontarans are supposed to be, because we had Christopher Ryan at FantasyCon last year, and he's almost... Well, I say Isla's nearly as tall as him, shall we say.
Isla's nearly as tall as him, but then my daughter is quite tall.
Anyway, right, what else
have
we got?
Again, we have a cloned race where they all look different.
Yes.
I've always loved this sometimes, but I remember them from the first time around watching this, but I don't remember them being tall like that.
Yeah.
They're trying to speak through that. Oh, my goodness, that must have been so hot in Spain, but wow. Yeah.
Well, they're getting paid for it.
Sorry.
People always say that it's why is it they're a clone race and they all look different? It's like, yeah, they're different clone batches. A one race, I'm assuming, and they kind of took those genetic qualities and, you know, so while they are cloned, they're cloned from, you know, different genetic material.
Clones can look different. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I must take this opportunity to apologise to the listeners for the background hum. It's because I don't buy that. Well, you don't buy my background hum.
I agree with Ian.
Oh,
what?
Okay, well, I don't.
Oh, Kirby's joined Ian's gang. Mary, just to make you feel a bit better, I'm on the fence.
Oh, well.
That must be painful.
Sounds painful. Yeah.
So the next scene is a scene of the Doctor and Perry by this sort of puddle. Fishing for Gumball Jack.
Master,
Perry.
Oh, God, here we go.
Master, when they were looking at locations, that was filled up to the edge. And then a few months later, when they were filming, they didn't realize that it was going to do that.
What?
Become a cliff.
The puddle or the...
Become a cliff. Become empty.
Anyway.
I did wonder why they were fishing off of such a great height.
I have to say that there's a couple of things I really appreciate about that scene. And they're both attached to Nicola Bryant. But
what about the problem?
You really
with
dig
her
the
shoes?
Shorts and the bra?
That too. Well, I like the shorts.
What about the problem with her shoes?
I'm not bothered. I didn't see her shoes. I was just looking at her legs.
Other men are looking at something else, but Kirby's focusing on her shoes. What does that say?
I think she's got her toenails painted red.
Has she? Maybe we should get Lillian to discuss this particular element of the scene.
There's a wardrobe mistake. She's got different shoes outside versus when they come into the TARDIS and the Doctor faints. I posted a comparison picture on Facebook.
Anyway, so basically the Doctor's fishing, Perry's bored, the Doctor's fishing for Gumballjacks. Back to the Second Doctor, who's arguing with Dastari about his...
He was intrigued about the fish, though, didn't he? The way he sort of started engaging her about the fish. I thought that was quite nice, because she was so bored. And then he started intriguing her with tales of them. It was quite funny.
They threw that little prop into that stream. I wonder if it's buried in sediment somewhere along
the
stream.
I haven't actually got... Yeah, made of sort of latex. It's likely to still be there. But I haven't actually got...
I just love Colin Baker's acting with that, making it look like
yes.
Yeah,
on a BBC budget.
Laurie Nick says, Now we know the fetishes of Kirby and Ian. It's all good. And then Robert Bench Jr. says, hi, everybody. Hi, everyone. How about some pork chops with peppercorn sauce?
I'll put the kettle on.
Mm. I've just run out of teeth, anyway. Right, and so, yeah, the Dastari passes out. Oh, that's right, because it's the Santorans turn up and shoot a few people.
It's all fake.
What?
It's all fake.
Yeah, it's a fake attack. It's interesting the little weapons that these Santorans sort of brandish. They're a bit like magic wands, don't they?
They've been using that same weapon ever since we first saw Santorans.
Have they? I haven't noticed that. It looks a bit like Sooty's magic wand.
Do you want me to go back?
No, I don't.
Wizzy, let's get.
What a stupid question. Normally you just do it.
You know that I can do it.
Yes, I know that, and you know I'd rather you didn't. Lauren Nix says she was wearing those beige pumps in the beginning of the show. Then once in the ship, and after she'd been there a while, she put on those blue shoes.
I disagree because there's a scene where she walks in, she's carrying all of the fishing stuff. They've just come in, and the same scene, no breaks, you see her shoes.
I noticed that the chair that the doctor...
So I can be pedantic, Corey.
I noticed the chair that the doctor, like doctor flowers, sulked in. Hello? 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 I'm saying I noticed that the chair that the... Oh, for God's sake. That the doctor was sulking in during Vengeance on Varos was still in the TARDIS console room. Just saying. It's also quite funny that when they do go back into the TARDIS, it's Perry that's carrying all the stuff. I think the Doctor just managed the umbrella. It's quite amusing. And, of course, then the Doctor sees this scene of the Second Doctor being punished or being tortured in a tube, which causes him to do a bit of a Five Doctors fall on the ground thing, like the Peter Davison did in... you know, when all his other selves were being scooped up. That sort of scenario never really made much sense to me, to be fair, because it's all wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey, and why would he feel the pain of his former self? But there you go. I suppose, being a science fiction fantasy TV show, I suppose we have to accept that was the case.
Yes, it's like, oh, look over there!
His incarnations, he'd be feeling pain all the time for all the things that they go through.
Yes, yeah. Indeed he would. Thank you, Mary. Laurie Nix says, oh, nearly got the words out. Oh, I did. Mm-hmm. Laurie Nix says, then she switched those shoes several times, always carry a spare pair. And then Lillian Robbins says, I agree with Laurie. I was actually talking in regards to Lillian and how sexy Perry's legs were in that scene. That's all I was trying to find out. Back to the episode. So, I'm just moving forward because Shokai and Jacini are having a conversation about food again. So that's a bit of a filler conversation. And the Doctor sort of finds his way to the... Is it like a space station?
It's a big lab in space, isn't it? That looks
a big
like
lab in space.
Or something.
Yeah. And oh, you beat me to it.
Sorry.
Like, apparently it's like 20 castles in the sky.
There you go. Wow.
Robert Vance Jr. says, remember the Fourth Doctor liked fishing too? And then Lillian Robert said, Adam is responsible for my legs, #. Thank you. That's #. Lillian's legs. On this instance, it's #. Nicola Bryant's legs. Right, so the Doctor and Perry arrive in a kitchen which must have been a bit smelly. I know they did reference it, but it must have been a sight more smellier than that because all the food in it's rotten. Oh, that was quite cleverly done to give it that sort of feeling of having moved forward in time a little bit from their previous visit. So they just mooch around the corridors for a bit. Perry moans, unusually.
Very dark corridors, yes.
And then Jacini, Shokai, and a very tall Santaran arrive in a very beautiful Spanish villa.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Kind of run down.
Very beautiful Spanish villa.
Hacienda.
What?
It's a hacienda.
A hacienda.
Of course, it could in a big old building anywhere. You know, it didn't happen.
Or just big building. There you go.
Perry.
As I pointed out on the Facebook group, it is now a restaurant. You can go and eat there.
I wouldn't be thinking where it's Spain and they've got a very high COVID rate at the moment. I don't think it's likely to be a restaurant at this present time. yeah, I forgot to mention that there wasn't there a gassing incident? The Doctor and Perry sort of fall down because there's a point in which Perry's having a rest in the chair while the Doctor's massaging
the computer's,
her head.
The computer's taking the oxygen out of that part where they're at, and so the Doctor has...
Reminiscent of Sharda, Debbie. Remember that story?
Yes.
The next scene after this is when they knock on the door of the villa and meet that very old lady.
That little blind lady.
Yeah, that was going to be my quote, and I forgot. English! That was just quite amusing. Always remember that bit, apart from when I needed to remember it for the quote. Right, so there's a point in which the Doctor starts fiddling around, and he presses a button at some point, and then sees images of. Have I not got to that bit yet? I'll probably jump the gun a bit there, to be fair. So after the ladies have been killed, they basically Sontaran and Jacini and Shokai take over the now deserted villa. Well, it's not deserted. Well, it's
Hacienda.
Deserted. What?
It's a hacienda.
I'm going to call it a villa, so shut your face. Right, so the Doctor
villa
and...
Villa is not a villa.
Doctor and
villa
Perry...
Villa is also correct.
Thank you, Mary. She's doing well today. So the Doctor and Perry find a hole in one of the triangular thingies in the wall of one of the corridors where there just happens to be a sort of theme park, which is accessed by a slide, rather conveniently.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the last time Perry slid down an improved slide, she ended up getting spectrostoxemia. But fortunately, on this occasion, she landed quite comfortably. And then this is just a little opportunity for Perry and the Doctor to have a little bit of a bicker. And also for Jamie to have a little bit of a fondle.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, that's quite a struggle going on there.
Yeah. Never did get a chance to discuss that with Fraser Hines, but you never know, we might get a chance one day.
There's a kiss at the end of the whole story that looks a little surprising to Nicola.
Mm-hmm. So, anyway, of course, they keep cutting back to the villa with Chokai and Jacini sort of discussing food.
Excuse me, the definition of a villa...
Yes.
Says, especially in continental Europe, a large and luxurious country residence.
Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Yes, but I Googled what's the difference between villa and hacienda, and villa is a house often larger and more expensive than average in the countryside or on the coast, often used as a retreat, while hacienda is a large homestead in a ranch or estate, usually in places where colonial Spanish culture has had architectural influence.
Mm. I do apologise to the listeners for not having the lift music playing at that particular point.
Welcome to the 20 megabyte European real estate podcast.
That's 30 seconds of my life I'll never get back.
Spanish podcast.
God. Right. Robert Vince Jr. said the smell of death, as the Doctor said. So I should have mentioned that earlier on. Anyway, the Doctor and Perry have gone down into this strange sort of, it's almost like a collection, or sort of like a warehouse or a scaffolder,
or a Top of the Pops set.
Yes, wandering around all that stuff.
Which comment
actually on Top of the Pops?
I don't know. The Doctor finds a little panel to fiddle around with. Perry sort of works her way down because she's really bored still. And then we meet Oscar and his incredibly attractive but a little bit over-bossy girlfriend, I suppose you could call it a girlfriend. Or is it just sort of business partner? I don't know. She's very pretty.
Girlfriend.
That's girlfriend.
Yeah, it did seem to be girlfriendy. Well, Jamie did quite like her as well.
Well, I blame her for Oscar's death. Just like to put this out there now.
Yes.
Right.
The way that she is looking at him as he's dying and everything, it's girlfriend.
Oh, okay. Laurie Nix says...
absolutely horrible.
Okay.
His death.
Yes. Laurie Nix says, Kirby, tusk, tusk, the original meaning of hacienda was closer to villa. Take it from the girl with the Spanish ancestry. I think we're starting to move to, moving toward myself.
I've been out-pedanted.
Yes, you have. Yeah, so the only thing I didn't like about Oscar was his sort of apparent love for moths, yet he's going to kill him. That's the only thing I didn't really like about him. I like the fact that the TARDIS turns up and he just accepts that the police work in mysterious ways.
Interpol. Interpol.
Yes, Interpol, very good. Anyway, so while the Doctor's fiddling around with this panel, Perry gets groped by a mysterious figure, and he does his usual, Perry! Prior to a pathetic and rather weird sort of gas sort of... He knocks himself out and falls down. Amazingly manages to hang on to a bit of scaffolding... while unconscious.
Well, you can see the Kirby wires holding him up.
Yeah, I know, but it's still weird. But anyway, that's the cliffhanger for episode one here. The Doctor's hanging and the Perry's getting groped.
Right. And just to put the nail in the coffin of this episode is that the word villa is never actually used in the episode. Hacienda, however, is.
Yes.
When Anita says, nobody lives in the hacienda now. Only the Doña
Rara. Well, I'm going to say villa because it's shorter and I have to make up time that Kirby takes from me.
Best to be in this podcast anyway.
And anyway, it's only Servalan in this episode, not villa.
Oh, God. Right then. Laurie Nix says...
Oh, God, that was good.
Lillian Robin says, lol. So you get it. I think that's referring to you, Ian. And then Laurie Nix says, Perry gets groped. Is anyone keeping score of that? It should be a drinking game. All right. So episode two begins with a recap, and we turn out, just to cut a long story short, that the first scene is Perry lying on her back with a figure on top of her. We don't know what's been happening leading up to that. We just hope it wasn't too gross. And she knocks him out and rolls him off. and then she climbs up to help the Doctor. And they go back down and discover it's Jamie. Well, he should be with me. Of course, leading to more rather predictable dialogue from Perry. But it does also lead to a very sort of... When I was watching him stick those things on his neck, it actually did look quite painful. It was like little bulldog clips. I sort of like almost my eyes are sort of watering and wincing when he did that. So yeah, but yeah, that's good. Well, that's a good scene actually for Fraser Hines when he sort
in
of woke
dialogue,
up.
By the way, the word hacienda is used 6 times in the script.
You're not going to let it lie, are you?
Villa, none.
No, not at all. I'm on the Doctor Who transcript site as well. Yeah.
I'm going to stick with Villa, even though it's a has, because I can say Villa. Anyway, so there's a scene, where Jamie sort of wakes up. They kill the Doctor. Was really, really, really well done. But what I did like about what it set up was Jamie becoming a companion of the Sixth Doctor, and I think that worked really, really well, and I really quite enjoyed that for the rest of this particular story.
If he weren't so busy with Emmerdale, he could have continued as a companion.
Yes, I think he didn't stay in Emmerdale for much longer, to be fair.
I'm not sure. I've never seen Emmerdale.
Haven't you? right, so go back to the hacienda. Villa.
Thank you.
The villa. Yes, because now they've been joined by Dastari, who's... I forgot to mention that they've got this plan of creating a TARDIS, I think, but they need the symbiotic nuclei of a Time Lord. Now, when other people have flown a TARDIS before, they haven't necessarily needed their symbiotic nuclei, but on this particular instance, for the sake of the story, they do. They have the Second Doctor, who is sort of... being kept sedated So it's not quite nice for Patrick Troughton to be able to do quite a lot of scenes lying down. Meanwhile, Shockeye is trying the local cuisine, for instance, rat.
Yeah, ick.
And
I got to hand it to John Stratton.
I was just about to say, gorgeous. John Stratton, absolutely. You can tell he's loving playing this part, can't he? Because he's really into it. But back in the TARDIS, Jamie's found some of his old clothes in one of the wardrobe rooms, and he's sort of feeling like, he's had a shower as well. He's feeling like his old self. Some more very tall Sontarans turn up.
See, he is, since he's older, he is his old self.
Thank you for that. Yeah, some more Sontarans turn up, and then the Doctor and Jamie venture out. Doctor's taking his coat off, much to the glee of some people that don't like his coat, and he's now got a very colourful floral waistcoat.
I really do like that, him getting rid of the coat for this one, because it gives him a bit more of a kind of Doctor in action kind of thing, you know.
I agree. I do like his waistcoat, I do. But I also like the waistcoat of the fifth Doctor when they did Planet Far. I just would have been quite a nice little homage if he'd worn, and it would have fitted with his costume, the fifth Doctor's waistcoat.
Well, Perry does offer him a leak at one point when he's not feeling well.
I don't think the fifth Doctor did have the devil waistcoat, did he?
Leak?
Yes, he... Celery, sorry.
When you said he offered him a leak, I thought he wanted to go
There's
to the toilet somewhere.
There's a leak in my vegetable bowl, I'm
sorry. I got a leak in the bathroom.
Oh, dear.
That was quite
celery,
good.
Celery.
I enjoyed that. That was good. Well done, Debbie. Right. So then, of course, they meet Oscar, and Oscar immediately thinks the Doctor is a policeman for obvious reasons.
Interpol. Well done. Yes.
Yes. When you say leaks, I'm invariably reminded of the picture on the back of my More Goon Show scripts of the three goons holding up leaks.
Yes. Okay.
He just likes to rub it in, doesn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah.
Right.
And anybody making a cup of tea can now come back to this part. Well, just if you skip forward 15 seconds.
The only American who likes the Goon Show.
Oh God, no, he's going on about it again.
I'm a Kiwi who likes the Goon Show.
Well, yeah, but that's more.
That lives in America.
Kirby, I was just saying that you're rubbing it in because I said the word leaks. That's all. Not that implying that you were the only person.
Any excuse to mention the Goon Show.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Right,
you
anyway,
silly
so.
Boy, you. I wasn't
really that by this time.
You're not going to like how.
So, yeah, Dastari gets the Mickey taken out of him by the second Doctor, who's currently strapped to a stretcher. While he's just got quite calmly, he's just going, well, I've just got to take this stuff out of the Doctor's brain. It's going to kill him, but hey, oh well. I need it, so I'm just going to do it anyway. Then he gets threatened by a very tall Sontaran. This is just Dastari.
Very tall Sontarans whose mouths don't necessarily work properly.
And you can see the gap between the up their sort of collar thing through to their head, which looks a bit weird as well. And also, now we find...
the neck clone batch.
Now we find that the Sontarans can be killed by some strange chemical as well, as Jacini says later on in the story.
Why didn't they just hit them in their probic vent?
Yeah, that's the traditional way of killing them. But apparently now we have discovered through Jacini, which was never mentioned again, that they can get killed by this, the stuff that makes them go green and gooey, I think, that we see later on in the story.
That was gross.
Yes, some kind of acid.
Yes, indeed. We've got stuff coming through now. Robert Bench Jr. says...
Chronic acid kills them.
Oh, darn, he got to it faster than I did.
It's their evil lair now. That's what, obviously, when they're downstairs. It's quite a suitable evil lair. Laurie Nick says, Interpol summer tropical waistcoat attire. And then she says, sorry, Adam, I too like the Goonies. Nice one. And then Terry Marr says, kettle's on,
the
Adam.
The Goonies is not the Goon Show.
Isn't it? Well done, Kirby. Right then, so back to the episode.
I think that was his point.
And is it Anita, the girlfriend of, what's her name? Of,
Oscar.
Oscar, yeah. Was that Anita?
Anita.
It was. She was very pretty. Just moving forward a little bit, because the Doctor's trying to talk the Sontaran around, and then he comes out with one of his traditional Second Doctor catchphrases. If I can get the volume to work on this, here we go. Oh.
Well, that didn't work, did it?
Oh, that wasn't it. No, I was waiting for "Oh my giddy aunt, oh crumbs." It wasn't in that scene. I do apologize.
Oh, crumbs.
Right, so he fails in that instance, and Shockeye is. Shockeye's got this sort of rather unsurprising sort of need to taste Tellurian flesh. So.
Well, Jamie is quite tempting in that kilt, I suppose. But
if you say so, what we're talking about.
Nothing wrong with a man in a kilt. My husband married me wearing one.
Yes, all right.
But I think he might be putting on some pounds because they've got so much fabric around him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Has put them on a little. You notice that right at the beginning, and then they cover him with all the fabric. Oh, it's like,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's
a teenager, honest.
They come up with this plan to send Perry in to find out what.
This isn't the first time they've used the term that term for humans. They also called them Tellurians and the Sunmakers. And also in Carnival of Monsters.
Yeah, I know that, but I was just saying that's how they referenced it in this. I wasn't saying, oh, it's the first time they've ever mentioned it. I was just mentioning it.
I didn't say...
Anyway.
I'm just being pedantic.
Are you?
Right then.
So the Doctor, a typical Doctor fashion, comes up this plan... because they wanted to find out what's going on inside the villa. So they send... Perry, brilliant plan. Let's send the companion in. Not Jamie or Angelina. I couldn't send Jamie because they'd already met him. Not Anita or Oscar. No, they're sending Perry. And, of course, when Shockeye, who's just mentioned that the thought of eating human flesh, looks out the window and sees Perry, we're all going, Perry. And he's going, dinner. yes. Which is quite funny. It's quite funny because the expressions and sounds he's making as he's leaning out the window did remind me of Les Dawson quite a lot. Anyway, so they set about doing their little operation on the Doctor.
Wait a second, I just noticed as he's looking down from the balcony at her and she's walking across the courtyard.
Yeah.
She's back to wearing the other shoes, not the blue shoes that she had inside the TARDIS.
Wonderful. Right, so anyway, they do this operation on the Doctor.
Completely buggered up now. That's it. End of the episode.
And we might as well just cancel Doctor Who now.
Yeah, that's it.
The great shoe scandal of Doctor Who.
By the sounds of things, their continuity person wasn't watching when she was wearing her regular standing around offset shoes and putting on her costume shoes. Mm.
Yeah, they'll blame it on the heat or something. You know?
Anyway, they
it should be the other way around. They usually do the location shooting, then the interior shooting.
Marvelous. Anyways, they beam this weird beam at the Doctor and makes him twitch a little bit because they're agitating his brain cells because apparently that's a way of drawing out this stuff. And then there's a funny scene in which... Anita gives the Sixth Doctor a kiss goodbye, and Jamie comes up and hoping she shakes her hand and hoping he's going to get a kiss off her. Of course, she just says bye and walks away, which I thought was quite amusing. And then I think Perry arrives at the door, and of course, instead of eating her, Jacini comes up with, oh no, before you eat her, we need to make sure she doesn't recognize the Doctor.
Yeah. She's thinking about the Doctor. She can't work
out. Yes, she's got some sort of... she's almost like a little bit like Troy from Star Trek.
Yeah.
She can just sort of sense certain things. Anyway, moving forward. So they're just about to do the operation on the Doctor, the Second Doctor, when, of course, all this kicks off and they have to wheel him into a room. While
she wants her to wheel him past just to see how Perry will react to seeing him.
Yeah, so they strap him back into a chair while the Sixth Doctor and Jamie skulk around. And then Perry comes down and, of course, they wheel him past. She just thinks, oh, what's a bit odd? Is he all right? And, of course, they imply he's in a sort of rest home. He's having a bit of a snooze. And then she tries to... say, it's all right, I'm done now. No, that's Shockeye. Why don't you just show her the kitchen, of course?
Yeah.
Not particularly interested in it.
Yeah.
You must want to see that. I'm sure she'd be interested in the kitchens while he's dribbling, you know.
Like, well, I think it would have been more. Well, she probably would have been more worried if judging by his sort of demeanour, if she said, "Choco, show her the bedroom." But anyway, she carried on. And the doctor finds the little triangular shaped wobbly thing and starts fiddling with it and sort of. And then Perry manages to just about get out of the house and gets chased by a fawning oaf. God knows how he managed to catch up with her. She did fall over, but I think even me in my size had fallen over the way Perry did, I still would have managed to get away from the fawning oaf.
She probably had access to some magic water.
I know.
Rag.
I was thinking that the magic handkerchief and magic water got deployed. Yeah.
I do have to say that the comment was brought up before about groping Perry, but one thing I noticed in rewatching this, if you watch Mr. Stratton, he is very careful about where he touches Nicola Bryant. He
only touches on her boobs,
his hands don't go anywhere near any of those. And the amount he has to manhandle her, it looked like he was an utter gentleman. But
yeah, I wasn't there. I should hope so too.
He does sound like one as well. He may look like an unkempt barbarian, but his voice is
thespian actor. Yes.
He's an actor.
Yes. I'm just waiting for episode 3 to load. It's a BritBox has lost its connection to episode 3.
Yeah, lovey. All right, lovey.
I'm a lovey.
It's completely lost. So what's going on here? I've got to sign back in. How weird. Right, anyway, Robert Venge Jr. says, off to rallies for burgers and fries. Be back later. So we're talking about a character that's obsessed with food, and maybe it's just made Robert hungry.
He's
got his priorities wrong there, hasn't he? Right then, BritBox is completely locked up, which doesn't help me at all. So I might have to do episode 3 by memory, which as everybody knows, my memory is not that good. Nope, it's locked up. Let's give it another go.
You had the same problem 7 years ago, not obviously not with BritBox, but your DVD was failing.
Did I? Well, strange.
What is going on with you and this story, Adam,
Me and this story? I'm just waiting.
And yes, I listened to
the episode starting. Hang on, is this the right one? No, let's come back to the beginning again. Hang on, bear with, technical issues. All right, there's the you can hear the theme tune. Now I've got to get the volume down. There we go. Right. Is it the right episode, though?
We'll find out.
Yes, it is. Thank goodness for that.
24-hour motion and split the three episodes into six.
Of course, what actually happens is Shokai catches Perry, chops her somewhere, not with a knife, with his hand, and knocks her out, and then carries her back to the kitchen.
There's a little bit of an issue with that bit, though, because she kind of flops her head down and then he knocks her out. It's a bit off. It's like she went down too early and he's like, oh well, poof. Like, I'll hit her anyway.
So the Sixth Doctor and Jamie get caught by one of the Sontarans, and then one of the Sontarans uses Jamie as a threatening tool to try and get the Doctor to do what he wants to do, but then Jamie stabs him in the side of the leg. Not in the leg, just in the side of the leg.
Because they're just not really involved in this story, are they? They're just the patsy.
This particular Sontaran.
The Sontaran says, ow.
Stabbed in the leg.
Yeah.
Doused with acid. Then he tries to time travel and gets, like, goofied, and then gets blown up by his own spaceship.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
the Doctor and Jamie run out of the little downstairs sort of inner sanctum just as Shokai's carrying Perry into the kitchen and past the Second Doctor, who's now in the middle of the foyer, I suppose you'd call it. And then hang on, just let me thingy stop. The Sontarans have a bit of an argue, and then Dastari and Jacini talk about resuming their sort of operation of the Doctor, but he's pretending to be unconscious at this stage, so he's his eyes open and he's listening in. So Shokai has got Perry in the kitchen, ready for what they do with butchers? Dismembering, that's the word, I suppose. But he has another job to do before doing that, so he puts his knife down. I didn't notice the weird beard that one of the Sontarans had, which is a bit... almost like he wanted to play King Richard in some sort of Shakespearean sort of play.
That's always been my problem with the Sontarans, was the facial hair. It was always not quite right.
No, well, not right at all, was it, in this one?
Yeah.
So the Doctor gets
off
Will back...
from wigs.
The Doctor gets Will back into the inner sanctum, and Shockeye gets zapped by one of the... Sontarans, but he's not killed, he's just sort of...
No, Shockeye is shot by
Dastari?
No.
Anyway, the rather weird idea is to then augment the Doctor as an Androgum, which leads to some Troughton to be able to do some rather comedy acting.
Oh, yeah.
So the Doctor and Jamie...
The best part of the entire story.
Yeah.
Well, one of the best
parts.
Yeah,
it is, yeah.
So anyway, so after the operation, augmentation, Shockeye wakes up. He's rather cross, but he's not cross for too long because he makes very quick friends with Androgum Doctor, who's quite hungry at this stage. So they make the plans to march off arm in arm into the town for dinner. Meanwhile, the Sontarans fall into Jacini's trap and get sort of done in by some of the sort of little weapons she's created to destroy them. And the Doctor,
it's
Perry...
the acid we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, the Doctor, Perry and Jamie then see the Doctor and... Shockeye heading off arm in arm. Of course, now the Doctor has gone, they realise that they actually need the Doctor for their little time machine. And then one of the Sontarans is just gone a bit sort of gooey. He's not very happy either, is he? He blames... I think he blames Jacini. Was it Dastari? Anyway, he's not happy. He's after them. And the two tramps head off into the town. There's a funny scene in which... the Doctor, a la Troughton, runs after this this car that's going past, holding onto his hat while he's running. And how much longer did Troughton live after this episode?
A while.
Pardon?
It was a while.
Was it? Because I just think of him running, and he's obviously got... He died of a heart attack, and you think, oh, God, you know, should he have been doing that? But
This was 1985. Let's see.
He
died in 87. Okay, so 2 years.
Okay. Well, rather sort of makes me think that really should have been doing that.
He died about 3 hours from where I live.
Yeah.
That was your fault.
So... And then there's
No, I didn't live here at the time.
Sure.
There's a ridiculous scene in which I think the Sontaran tries the little triangular-shaped wobbly thing doesn't feel too good afterwards. And then the Doctor starts going all... And this is the Sixth Doctor, starts going all androgummy, which, again, I found a bit ridiculous. So what he's trying to say is, because the Second Doctor's gone all androgummy, every single Doctor... around at the time, in the time continuum, would have gone all androgummy for a little bit.
Absolutely, because it's a science fiction fantasy TV program.
I bet that would have been fun to do.
Right then. So,
By the way, theoretically, there's another wardrobe malfunction, but I haven't been able to spot it. I mean,
thank goodness
exactly
for that.
Not exactly malfunction, but a wardrobe difference, as Patrick Troughton was sitting... next to that fountain, they took a little break, and someone nicked his handkerchief, and so they had to go and find another one which was similar.
Oh, that's interesting. Laurie Nick says, "Be safe." That's to Robert, of course. And Alan T. Butcher says, "Don't dismember me, even if I am a butcher." Well done, Alan. Well done. I'm impressed with that one. See, that's the way it's done, Kirby. Anyway, so after the Sontaran had a go in the little triangular-shaped wobbly thing, he went really gooey, green and gooey. Hello, I've got a daughter at the door, yes?
Can you get rid of the age restriction on
the war zone? There isn't an age restriction on the blah, 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 all war zone. I don't think there is.
Can you put my account as 16?
But I have not put your account as 16.
I'm not able to play it.
What?
This is highly important to the show, of course.
Obviously, I've now got,
yes, it is.
Got to go in and change her parental guidance settings. I'm pretty sure I looked at them the other day and they were okay. Come in. Have you got clothes on? Yeah. Come in. Shut door.
That should have been the first question.
Yeah.
Well, just so you can think about it as to where we're at. We're up to the gooey Sontaran as he's falling out of the thing. Yeah. I've got a message from somebody called Isabella Pearson.
Did I just send now? Are you kidding me?
I'll mark that as red. Where is it? Why can't I not log? Here we go. Right then. Account settings.
Well, while we're doing this, an interesting fact that I didn't realize until I read my Sixth Doctor guide that originally the part of Jacini was offered to Elizabeth Spriggs.
Who, I think that wouldn't have worked for me.
I mean, I don't really remember from back then. I mean, we would have seen her in Paradise Towers.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the taller of the two older women, Elizabeth Spriggs. For those of you who don't know who she is.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's one of the few that I still haven't seen. I'm waiting until we get around to it.
Right, I've now changed Isabella's game level from 18 to allowed. So even though she says it wasn't working, I didn't. She's 14. She plays 18 games, but she's.
If she's mature enough to deal with it, then why
not? If Debbie says she's mature enough to deal with it, she's mature enough to deal with it.
Exactly. So why not? Exactly.
With all of our girls, we basically would ignore those sorts of things and decide because of the person, not the...
Absolutely. We watch things through. I mean, we watched Living Daylights with Ina the other day, and that can be quite violent, but it was brilliant. She loved it.
Living Daylights. That was Aha.
My favourite band doing a James Bond thing. I love Aha.
Right, then, back to Doctor Who. So, yeah, the Sontaran... I will say, as the Sontaran fell out of the triangular-shaped wobbly thing... he looked like he'd been vomited on.
He did, didn't he? Yeah.
He's got all that green stuff.
Which will explain as to why
he's had a rough day, and his day is not over.
Maybe he just vomited on himself. Maybe he got motion sickness from the triangular shape wobbly thing. Anyway, so the Doctor and Jamie and Perry find their way into the village where the Doctor and Shockeye find a restaurant, which just happens to be... what's his name? Oscar's restaurant.
Oscar Botchaby.
And yeah, so they order some food and yeah. But they haven't quite been found. There's a big explosion, wasn't there? That's right, because there was a big bang set up by Jacini at the villa.
No, it was place. They set the self-destruct on the Sontaran ship.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I have a problem with this because, okay.
He forgot he asked him to do it.
Yeah. But the thing is, there were two Sontarans there, right?
Yeah.
So the general was going to take the Kurtz Reimer module and rejoin the battle group, right?
Yeah.
How is the other guy going to get home?
Science fiction fantasy TV show. No, I don't know.
I'll take this. You go up you go blow up the spaceship. All right, boss.
yeah. You're right.
One thing I like.
You mean while you're in it?
with the explosion of the spaceship, the reason the Sontaran leg is in the later scene is they were originally going to throw it at the camera during the explosion, but they decided not.
That would have been cool, but I suppose that would have upset Mary Whitehouse quite a lot, I would imagine. But yeah, that would have been quite cool. Oh, sorry, are we carrying on?
Okay. I've got a story about throwing things, but I'll tell that later.
You can do if it's relevant, but then Kirby does stuff that isn't relevant, so I suppose it doesn't really matter, does it?
Irrelevant? It's a hippopotamus.
It's relevant to the story. It was a thing in the kitchen that they did during filming.
Dastari is wandering around the bar Rosteria del Laurel. And then some señorita starts flirting with him, throws a
bouquet. Oh, yeah, here's a whole...
here, have a flower. He's just like...
He, don't you know, he gives it to... what's her name? Serverland, Jacina, yeah. It gives it to her. I love that touch.
Well, it definitely is Villa.
Well, you know, the woman who throws the flower is, her name is Mercedes. She was helping the location guy find all locations, and she was translating.
Oh, okay.
And actually, sitting outside one of the establishments is the director, Peter Moffat, and I think the costume designer.
So you're trying to outdo Kirby then. You did it. Well done. Right, so the Doctor, Perry and Jamie are still looking for the Doctors the other Doctor and Shockeye while they're finished off their meal and finding out that the bill's a bit high and they haven't really got enough money to pay it, which results in, because they won't pay the bill,
worst scene in the entire story.
Anita sending her a boyfriend to his death.
Yep.
He gets stabbed with a not much blood, considering it must have gone through his heart to kill him so quickly.
This was heavily edited in New Zealand.
It was? Why, because it was too violent?
Well, it got edited probably in Australia first, but it was much, much later till I actually saw a proper physical, some of the copies we got of that scene that couldn't see were like, 12th generation video cassette.
Oh, yeah. I remember those days.
Yeah. But anyway, is it because basically
what I find strange is that in spite of him being stabbed and dying, look at the other people in the restaurant. They're just kind of going on eating their meals, and the waiters are.
So they're not rushing out in panic. They're not doing anything.
I mean,
they're finding a phone box and calling for an ambulance or anything
over there.
Yeah. It was very understated, wasn't it? I've been stabbed to death. Looks.
I die.
I die. Yes.
And he does that whole big stage death thing.
Yeah.
It is a good death, though. He does a good job of it.
Yeah.
Take care of my moths, Anita.
So, yeah, indeed. He does indeed die rather theatrically. I suppose that's in fitting with the character.
I was just checking both DVDs. Apparently, my set of DVDs does not have deleted scenes that I could find, but theoretically there is a deleted scene where the doctor, the second doctor, actually does pay the bill.
Oh. Okay.
Interesting.
But anyway. So he dies, but the second doctor then very quickly returns to being himself. Now, I had a funny feeling that the way Dastari described it is that they needed to sort of finish off an hour, this augmentation, but it would, if he didn't get a further dose, it would be permanent. Is that what he was saying? Hence,
that was established.
Yeah, so that's why
the final coat. He'd get the final coat on,
He returned.
He'd done the undercoat, but he hadn't done the final coat. The weather gets at it, and it's just useless.
Not long after that, they all get caught by Jacini and a very sexy-looking gun. Shockeye returns to the villa, I suppose. I don't know, and thinks he sees all these people arriving. Oh, din-dins! And there's a point in where, of course, that funny scene when he wanders in. Holding up the Sontaran leg, which just looks like it's covered in green tissue paper or something like that.
Vomit. Just got it off the local T-Rex by the look of it.
Anyway, they one of my favourite scenes actually is the scene where use Perry. Pardon?
Oh, the whole with the they're getting the key. Why did he drop the key in front of them anyway?
I don't know.
To put it out of reach.
But I just noticed.
Why did he just take the key with him?
I just noticed Perry's wearing the blue shoes in the studio.
Yeah, they're quite cute.
But outside, she's wearing the other shoes.
Anyway, the scene where the doctor. Well, they're going to use Perry to prove the machine works. And the doctor sort of like does this almost like a wink to us. I'll be all right, Perry, be all right. And of course it works. But Jacini still doesn't quite believe it. Shockeye grabs Jamie and thinks, right, it's dinner time, because he's, quite a lot of meat on him. And the two doctors get tied together by a pillar of some front. Oh yeah, and Perry's on the other pillar, of course.
With the blue shoes.
They contrive, like right? They contrive to release themselves, and Jamie, who's now unconscious, is about to get disemboweled, but gets rescued by the sixth Doctor. And then, of course, as he's being rescued, the sixth Doctor gets slashed in the leg by Shockeye.
Ouch!
And
that's by the way, that's what Fred said when that happened. She went,
Yeah. But instead of eating Jamie, he goes chasing after the Doctor. But that leads to that revolting scene of Jacini sort of seeing the blood on the pavement and going all androgamy. Now, the Doctor.
I really love that scene, and she really sells it too. I think it's fantastic, and that got edited out. And
Shows her androgamness.
Yeah, no, I like it.
And then the way he looks at her, like.
Yeah, didn't. Yeah,
well, that was failed.
I like it. It's a great scene. I like what they were trying to do with this. It's just. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't have done it in the 80s.
No. Anyway, so the Doctor is injured. He's hobbling along, yet he still managed to get further away from Shockeye than Perry did, when she was without an injury. But anyway, so the Doctor.
And we set the thing that we set up in the first episode.
Yeah.
With the cyanide, and the Doctor has now killed two people with cyanide.
Has he? Who else did he kill?
Well,
he
killed.
Pardon?
Solon.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. Yes. Yeah, but he had to. That's self-defense, wasn't it? And this was self-defense as well. So he does indeed, like Kirby says, kill Shockeye with the cyanide. Who's to say that Androgums are fine cyanide that would be poisonous to them, I'm just saying. And then Jacini goes downstairs.
Master, it's a science fiction fantasy TV program.
And, she's about to kill Perry and Dastari, who's now chainsides, just in the time. Jumps in the triangular-shaped wibbly-wobbly thing, and then screams, falls out, goes all androgamy, dies. And, very fetching.
Very violent story.
Very fetching
it
set
is,
of...
actually, yeah. Lots of bits, isn't there, and things, yeah.
Very fetching set of red eyebrows on her as well. And then we see the comedy scene of the Doctor and his is it a Stattenheim Renault Patrol? Oh, I can't remember.
Yeah.
And that away they go and blah blah blah. And End of episode. Okay, right. Two Doctors. Now I can't remember what I said last time, but I'm pretty much sure that I probably said I really enjoyed it. It's essentially a six part format. I think they probably could have made this a four-parter, to be fair, but I accept that it's an opportunity to see a lot of Patrick Troughton. However, there's a lot of areas of the story where there isn't any Patrick Troughton, and the things have been filled. And I think if they can take out a lot of the filler conversations, they could have compacted it down to two parts and had more of Patrick Troughton on screen. Just would have worked for me a bit better. I can understand Kirby's annoyance to the death of Oscar. It is a bit irritating, to be fair. But on the whole, it's a really good story. It's lovely to see, obviously, Patrick Troughton and Fraser Hines bouncing off each other again, and then Fraser and Colin bouncing off each other. Perry not moaning as much as she's been moaning up to now. It's been actually looking really, really lovely in this story. And another beautiful girl in regards to Anita. All in all, the Sontarans are a bit rubbish, to be fair, but and I think they only really brought them in so they could do that Jim Will Fix It scene with that nipper, which we won't talk about because it's Jimmy Savile. But on the whole, it's a really, really good story. And it's sad that was the last time we get to see Patrick Troughton playing the Doctor. So what did you think about it, Ian?
I like it. But then again, it's a Colin Baker episode, so what's not to like?
It's great.
But no, there is a lot to like. It's I kind of been enjoying going through these again because it's one of those things where I see what they're doing and it's like it was just the wrong time to try it. I mean,
why'd you say it's the wrong time to try it?
It was the 80s just was the wrong time to try and do this in Doctor Who. The funny thing is why do we all hate Oscar's death? Because if you look at modern Who, they kill characters off all the time. Mm. And but this one is just seems really kind of out of place. It's because of when it was. And it was out of place at Doctor Who in that time. But now we lose people all the time. Yeah. We lose companions all the time. And it's not so jarring. But back then it was just I can see where they were going with what they were doing. They were trying to push the show in another direction. They were trying to be different and grow the show up a bit, and I kind of get that. And but yeah, I mean, this when you look at some of the things that they cover in here about, okay, well, there's this creature at the top of the food chain of this planet that won't eat itself. It's a bit rubbish, isn't it? You know, it's like, oh, you'll eat everybody else, but you won't eat you.
And it was just kind of sorry.
Yeah, and their whole approach to food, the androgams, I felt like it was really kind of a neat idea of a race that was so invested in just pleasing that kind of instinct. I'm assuming that there are different kinds of androgam society, but they share common traits of like really getting into their food. Like, that actually sounds like a really cool kind of a race. I mean, they just really like to eat. What's wrong with that? But you know, it's in some of the other stuff does bug me though, the lightness in the story. I mean, we're supposed to think that what the Time Lords pack into the TARDIS, which is essentially the outer shell of a huge craft, but Kurtz and Reimer managed to do it in something that looks like it was made out of Perspex. I'm sorry, but time travel and that? No thanks.
you notice how wobbly it was when Shacini was, you know, opening and closing it. It was.
Yeah, she had to slam the door at one point and say, hang on, it's out of alignment.
Yeah.
Give it a bit of welly when you close the door.
I did mention that on several occasions. That's why I call it the triangular-shaped wibbly-wobbly thing.
Yeah. It's like, so, I mean, there's... And the Sontarans are just... Poor Sontarans. But I mean, I do have to hand it to them, aside from the height. But then again, you know, depending on who you can get hold of, you know, they're like, who wants to go to Spain and wear a really, really hot costume? Nobody? Okay, well, we didn't tell these guys it was really hot, right? No, well, they'll do. so I got to hand it to them for at least, you know, putting up with that. But the other problem I have, of course, is you know, JNT and his penchant for where should I go on vacation this year? And costing the show really something that really didn't need to be, you know, part of its operating budget. Mm. You really need an on location in a foreign country story.
Story anywhere.
It's like there were. I mean, yes, the man kept the show going for a long time, but he also did some things like that I don't agree with. Where it wasn't, you know, they did a fantastic job. Don't get me wrong on this story of making sure that every Spain shot said Spain. So you know, so that was great. I mean, but again, it's just one of those things that kind of hurts about that era of the show where. You know, we're supposed to believe that they were hurting for money, yet they pitched this based on, you know, oh, well, let's just go here because it's nice and hot and we can swim in the pool. yeah, but overall, great story, and there's some fantastic elements, and of course, Colin Baker gets to do a lot of theatrical stuff in here, especially his speech to Perry when they arrive at the space station. Fruit, soft flesh, peeling from, you know, it's like, just the way, I love the way he waxes poetically and, you know, theatrically, and it's just, it makes my heart sing. No. Anyway, that's me.
Yes.
I kind of liked it. Yeah. I enjoyed it.
Laurie Nick says, aren't we glad that Adam doesn't control the parental control for the podcast and comments? And then Laurie Nick says, the Senorita thought he was the dude from the Buggles. And then Matthew Kressel joined the viewership. Hello, Matthew. Yes. All right, then. So who should we go for next? Debbie, what did you think?
Oh, you make me almost last again. So everyone's already said
oh,
everything.
Oh God, should we? He's moaning.
Just let Kirby do it.
Go on then, Kirby. Go on then, Kirby. I'll sit back.
Kirby's next.
Kirby.
Well, the thing is that you need the for me, because it's well known that I do not like this story. It's my second.
Why do you have to have the bum bum ba if it's well known?
Well,
exactly. Nice one, Dave.
Very unpredictable.
isn't that surprise?
The thing is that I even made reference to that in putting out the request for feedback.
So essentially, exactly. The bum 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 should have been. They said, "Well, I didn't actually like this story, but actually, surprise, surprise, did I did like it."
That's what I thought.
Plus, if you had listened to us 7 or 8 years ago, I actually like it less as it even less than then.
Oh my gosh!
I mean, in a lot of these cases, as I watch one of these stories a second, third, fourth time, I tend to like it better. I like this one worse. The Twin Dilemma is worse than this. but I just don't like it. It's just not typical Doctor Who. I don't like the Centaurians are wrong. There's just too much. Yeah, there's death in current Doctor Who, but there wasn't as much death in Doctor Who in those days. It's just jarring. I mean, I think this is other than the Lighthouse one with the fourth Doctor, there nobody lives for that one, and Anita lives
for this. Can I just interject here, Kirby? A few weeks ago, we watched Caves of Androzani, where everybody dies apart from Perry. And the president, the lady president. So apart from those are the only two characters that didn't die in that story.
Okay.
Horribly as well.
There's just a tonal difference between that one and this one. I just don't like it.
Okay.
We kind of got that point.
Yep.
Yeah.
So to shorten that thing, I could edit it down to Kirby just says, I don't like it, and move on.
Last time I said, it's okay.
Okay.
This time, well, no, I was really...
So basically, I could have waxed lyrical about how much I enjoyed it, and I wouldn't have said anything extra to impede your...
No.
There are things about it I like.
Hang on. There's things about it he likes, everybody. Hang on, everybody. Wait. There's things about it he likes.
I do like the...
there you go. Happy now?
That guy and the second Doctor in the third episode are great. It is funny. The whole business where the Doctor turns into an Andragum is funny. Some of the whole Andragum stuff is almost racist.
Almost?
Yeah. And that I found uncomfortable. More uncomfortable now than 7 years ago. But, okay, other things I liked about it... I do like the setting. I mean, a lot of reviews of this, everyone's going, it didn't need to be in Spain. It's just not right. No, it looked fine in Spain, and the music was good too.
It's supposed to be in New Orleans.
I know. And then Venice, when New Orleans fell through, they were going to do a Lionheart was going to help with financing, and it fell through.
This wasn't a one-upmanship kind of opportunity there, Kirby? Or is this
Are we moving on
going?
Now?
Come on, man.
Are we moving on?
I'm sorry.
Right,
I don't know. That's up to Kirby.
All right, then. Debbie.
Oh, God. Sorry, you made me lose my point.
What point? God. I'm not deducting points.
There's still a point coming.
Right, okay.
This is painful. fool.
Debbie. Yes.
I think that's what he was saying about the episode.
Debbie.
I was saying the music was great. I liked the Spanish music and the Spanish scene, and I love the Centauran march. That's just great. Did they continue that? I mean, I'm trying to think. Did they reference that in New Who? The same Centauran music?
No idea.
I don't think so.
Possibly.
Like, yeah, the ship's the same, which I
okay,
was
so about. So anyway, I like it.
You don't like it, or do you like it? It sounded like you said you do you like it.
That's another thing I do like is that the Doctor is the Sixth Doctor is becoming less grumpy.
Okay. I thought we established that last week. Debbie, what did you think?
Quick, Debbie.
I loved it so much. I watched it twice.
Woohoo! Is that it?
I really enjoyed it. Patrick Troughton is amazing. Fraser Hines, fantastic. Watching him act with 2 and 6, it's just amazing. I absolutely loved this, the whole banter, the silliness, the goriness. It just was everything I wanted to watch. And I sat down and binged last night, to be perfectly honest, because I just hadn't got round to doing it. And I was just in that. Tom had gone to bed a bit early, and I was like, I have got to watch this, and I really would like to watch this one because I remember this one, and it didn't disappoint. It was just as much fun as I think because of my memories of it as well. But I do not remember the Centaurans being these strapping, wonderful big guys. And I just don't remember that. But I just felt so sorry for them because they were so underused. They were just patsies, you know, and that was such a wrong way. They could have used anything other than Centaurans. They could have got away with some random alien that's never mentioned again, you know, and that was how unimportant that bit really felt, because they were just, obviously they were being muffled a lot, so you were kind of missing a lot of their points because you're so busy straining to hear them through that. And you just feel for them in the heat because you know how hot it is in Spain, and you're just like, oh my God, they were in those outside in the middle of the day, you know, it's like, brave guys. So
just, I got a note about that.
They
tried to do filming in the morning for them and then put them in the hacienda to cool off.
Fair enough. That sounds just the sort of thing I'd have done. I love the fact that we just randomly went to Spain because why not? And it was just such fun, a fun episode. And I just thought Colin Baker is the Doctor that I remember a lot, but not enough, obviously. I didn't pay enough attention. It was always on, but obviously I didn't pay enough attention. But I remember this because I can remember thinking, oh, my God, Spain's beautiful. And I just remember the whole idea of eating humans. And it was about that time that I became aware that, actually, yeah, you know what? Human might be quite tasty to someone else.
What were you going to say to yourself for a second?
Yeah, well, you know what I mean. Just stories. It comes up in novels. You know, like
that's stories.
You start reading older books and with ideas of, you know, having to resort to cannibalism and things like that. And that becomes more of a thing as your reading progresses. And then suddenly you're watching it on one of your favorite TV shows. It was so weird.
Like Red Dwarf.
Yeah, it was just like, okay, we're discussing that, okay. But I also felt it was quite ahead of its time, just for that one scene where he talks about the way that we pen our animals in small pens and things like that. And I've always felt very strongly about battery farming and things like that. And it was about this time.
Yes.
Yeah, it was about this time that the outcry for that was really starting to take off because we were all doing school projects on it and things like that. And so it was a public outcry. As, you know, technology was moving on. Some more handhelds were going into little farms and things. So, you know, but that's just me, and I shouldn't really bring my politics things into this. It is just such a good little cuff, almost throwaway scene that just.
Another reason I don't like it, by the way.
It's going. That's it. Exactly. What for me, it works for me. And I didn't watch this one with Isla. I'm not sure if I will, considering she's still terrified of Vashti Narada, and this whole aspect of eating might just be a bit too much of a concept for her. But I think I will watch this one again with her because I think she's sick. Because I was younger than her when I did. So yeah. But other than that, loved it.
Thank you, Debbie. And before we move on, go on then, Kirby. Say that's the other thing you didn't like about it. You're talking about the.
I didn't like the whole anti-meat eating thing being bashed over my head.
Yeah, it wasn't as bad as being bashed over the head by certain things in the last series with the 13th Doctor, though.
Oh,
was it?
God, yes, yes.
True.
Oh, gosh. Yes.
But the part of that is. Though I've got to admit, is myself, because I did used to be vegetarian. Okay. So maybe I'm feeling guilty.
I was vegetarian this morning when I had my breakfast.
Being anti-meat eating.
No, exactly. This is embracing meat. I'm a meat eater. I'm an avid meat eater. I'm just careful about where I get it from. But, you know, just, you know.
The only thing that
Robert Holmes was a vegetarian, and he was trying to put reasons in there for being a vegetarian.
All I got from it really is how well we taste with bits and bobs and things.
I would not agree that it's pro-meat, because I think it makes meat sound disgusting.
Yeah.
It makes it look disgusting. Oh. And also with the smelly bit when they come out of the TARDIS into the kitchen where it's all rotting, that is disgusting.
Yeah. And that's all Robert Holmes. And anyway.
Well, the cucumber didn't fare too well, did he? Talking about being vegetarian.
I love the cucumber bit.
Yeah, I like the cucumber.
Terry Miles says, this tea is great. I think that's in reference to Kirby. And Alan T. Butcher said, like Debbie, I keep my politics out of my reviews as much as possible.
Uh-huh.
Okay, at long, long last... Mary, what did you think?
Well deserved this time, because I did not like this one at all.
Really?
I think
that
it went on and on, long scenes of a lot of talking. I saw it in 3 45-minute spots, and I could not wait for each one to be over. I was so bored with them. I mean, they had, you know, humorous times in there that where things would pick up a little, but for the most part, it just seemed like such a big waste of time. I did get amused at Fraser Hines trying to desperately recapture his Jamie character and failing it. Hiding his paunch with 50 pounds of tartan that kept sliding off his shoulder. I thought that was amusing. But was anybody surprised that Oscar, who first came across as this gadabout kind of jobbing actor, you know, loose, not, you know, into anything, now all of a sudden he owns a restaurant? I mean, did that come as a surprise?
He was just managing.
he was managing it for a friend while he was unemployed in theater.
Well, okay. Where did he say that?
in the first episode.
When he's talking to the lady in the grove.
I must have been sleeping through that part.
Yeah, and she said, well, maybe you can appeal to the board and then you can go back on tour.
Yeah. Okay.
But I mean, the whole thing just felt really off. There was so much gore. There was so much violence. And I did read that the BBC did delay the next season of Doctor Who. It was put off several months because they were getting so many complaints about the violence, you know, and the gore and all that. And people did not like that doctor. And I didn't either. You know, between what is the one that we not just saw, but the one where the people were being tortured. And this one, I mean, all of this has felt very off to me. I would, if I were one of the normal viewers, I probably would have tuned out on Doctor Who by this point, because it looked like that's where this was all going to continue to head. Funny thing is that the book that I read that talks about all these episodes had a very long thing, a written piece by Rob Sherman in it. Now, if anyone who is reading Running Down Corridors or has read any of his short stories or his poetry, you know that Rob Sherman, he sees things in a way the rest of us don't. He's really good at turning around things that we find normal and making them, you know, somehow not normal, whatever. But he talked so positively about this whole episode. He said Robert Holmes was given a free rein to write what he wanted. This was like where he could just write it all. The only constriction was that he had to put Centaurans in here. So what he saw Robert Holmes doing throughout this story, which if I ever watch it again, which is unlikely, maybe I can appreciate. But he said that Robert Holmes made a deliberate effort to put humor where there is tragedy and try to play down and make tragic things that we normally would find humor in. And that he even took the character of the second doctor, where we expect, you know, here's the second doctor. This is going to be so much fun, and made him kind of serious and off key until he became one of the emigrants. And then it's kind of like he had to transform into something else to then be the lighthearted and fun character that we all knew and loved. And he says that's the magic of Robert Holmes's writing. So, like I said, he had to add the Centaurans. So he decided that he was going to take away their scariness by making them ridiculous and not very effective throughout this whole thing. So that's what Rob Shearman saw in all of this, is that Robert Holmes was turning on its head everything that we were expecting and making us feel differently about, you know, things that should have been sad or things that should have been funny. And I think, well, okay, you know, you may have a point there. So if I, like I said, if I ever watch it again, maybe I will appreciate that more. Unlikely I'll ever watch it again.
Yes, Kirby.
I've got to say something.
Go on then.
Not 3 hours ago, I listened to us talk about this 7 years ago. And Mary, you loved it.
Ooh.
That's all right.
and the thing is
we all grow up and develop over time.
Yeah, this is great. This is great that I didn't understand what you were seeing about it then, because at the time I also didn't like it, and I like it less now. And
we were jumping around. We were seeing different stories all out of context.
True.
Now seeing it, and so I've gotten used to how I see and like my doctor, and so for these stories this is not my doctor.
Right Yeah, I expected to be, as the only one of us in this group today who doesn't like this one, I was expecting you to also be on the I was expecting you to also be positive, because you were positive.
Yeah, 7 years ago. I did not like Vengeance on Varos. I did not. Well, Mark of the Rani, I liked some, but I really didn't like this one.
Yeah. So I was expecting to be the only person to not like it. So okay. Thank you.
Right then. So it's on to feedback then, at long, long last. And Kirby, you have posted a request for feedback in the usual fashion. So you may, before you embark on that, I better check nobody's posted anything. Nope. You may continue with the feedback request posted.
The first comment was from Lillian, who says, editorializing before the podcast again, Kirby? Because I made a comment about Robert. I said feedback time for the two doctors, or Robert Holmes serves the audience a message on a platter, but it's overcooked.
Oh, sorry, you're supposed to laugh.
Robert Wins Jr. says, wow, it's just like looking in a mirror. It's a picture of the two doctors looking at each other when they were about to say snap.
Yeah. Although they didn't say quite snap. Do it in time, did they?
Mm. Right. And he also has a picture says of the fishing hole. Now, question, was Perry wearing a bra or a swim top while Gumbo Jack fishing?
I don't care.
It was a swim top.
Was it? Very nice. Mm-hmm.
It looked more like a bra to me.
Yeah.
It was a bikini top, wasn't it? It was a bikini top. And she sported it very well.
It was too far away to see.
Okay.
Trust me, I tried. Besides,
he was focused on shoes anyway.
No. You couldn't see her shoes when she was putting her top back on.
Move on.
Robert Wins Jr., my review of The Two Doctors. The story is one of my favorite, next to The Mark of the Rani. The Time Lords send the Second Doctor to stop some time experiments going on. He talks to the headman Destari, who looks like someone from a music video. Remember, video killed the radio star. The Second Doctor is kidnapped, experimented on. The Sixth Doctor and Perry has to rescue him on Earth. The aliens don't succeed, and the Second Doctor and Jamie are back on their way. It was great to see Patrick Troughton for the last time, and he did an okay job. It's great to see Jamie back in action. The elephant in the room is the death of Oscar. I think he should have been wounded and left alive. But the connection to Oscar helps the Doctor to kill the Energum with the butterfly net and cyanide-soaked cotton wool. This Doctor doesn't seem to mind killing that much to me. A lot of double crosses going on, and music used less in the story. Location shooting was the best part, and the Seville of the 1980s looked great. Nice to see Jacqueline Pierce in this as a replacement actress. Perry looked great with the hair and outfit. Yeah. The Sontarans were basically there for set pieces. They are a clone army. Are they not supposed to look the same? In Star Wars, Leia said to Luke as he rescued her in his stormtrooper outfit, "Aren't you a little short to be a stormtrooper?" We learned a little about the Time Lords and how they time travel, but we never really hear about this again in video form. Some great lines like, "More than one way to cook a cat," or "You're just desserts." This is part of the 6B canon of Doctor Who. Well, it's not really canon.
No.
The story is supposed to have taken place between the War Games and Spearhead from Space.
Mm.
I felt the story was too long and drawn out for me. Had a feel of The Last of the Summer Wine. Maybe the book was better. I don't know. I say above average story, rating 3.5 out of 5. Can't say that about Time Lash coming up. Oh, and by the way, I haven't seen Time Lash yet, so okay. That's going to be interesting.
There was a reference to the stormtroopers. Now, are the stormtroopers supposed to be clones?
Clones, yes.
If that's the case, why... Well, Finn was a stormtrooper, was he not? And he wasn't a clone, was he? He was just sort of... He was turned into a stormtrooper.
It depends on where in the story you are.
Okay. Okay, but moving on then.
He also posted a picture of the aliens from the Twilight Zone episode with the cookbook to serve man.
Okay.
And by the way, I've got a cookbook for serving men that's for humans. To be cooked.
Thank you for that. Yes, lovely. Moving on.
I also posted a link to the
Buggles video. Yeah.
Okay, Laurie Nix. Hang on, I gotta expand this out. Is it wrong that this episode always makes me hungry? No, not for what the Doctor is hungry for. Cats will not make puss-puss jokes. Oh, darn, too late. Though, who wouldn't be tempted to nibble on Jamie's tender saddle and haunches? Uh-oh, did I type that out loud? Incidentally, I applaud the Doctor for pronouncing the name of the Spanish side of my family's restaurant correctly.
Hey.
Anyway, as Robert said, this story and the Mark of the Rani are the high caliber and high camp that all of Six's episodes should have been. It's always a treat to see the Second Doctor and Jamie showing us how it's done. All the baddies were odd yet interesting. I lost track of the double crosses. The location music, strange little moments wandering in Seville. What a weird ass but picturesque trip. Anyway, I like my family size order of
paella.
With gumble jack, please.
Oh, I like paella.
Paella.
Robert Wentz Jr., but you should have seen the big one about the little gumble jack that got away. Or the joke at the beginning of the episode. Yes, Jamie, it's a big one. I posted links to the restaurant there. Lori says
it's currently shut. Yes,
Cardenia's Grill restaurant thereabouts, but it's common name and not the same one.
Right.
Ian's script. My showing Perry's shoes. Yeah. Neil James. I haven't seen this yet.
It was funny when you said about the script, the shoes and stuff. I'm surprised there's no pictures of our listeners asleep. But there we go. Carry on.
Neil James, the two doctors. It's wonderful to see the Second Doctor and Jamie back again. Great bit of comedy with the Doc and his cucumber, and the scenes of him arguing with Destari about the morals of scientific experiments are brilliantly written and performed. The story does take too long to get going, but there's plenty to enjoy. Perry's costume is brilliant this week, and Nicola Bryant does a fine job.
Indeed.
The Seville location is gorgeous, if a bit too random. I find the Sontarans a tad boring, but I love Jacini and Chakai and their dastardly wickedness. Shockeye is a fascinating and horrid creation, and scenes with the second Doctor on their murderous quest for food is easily the highlight of the story. Sadly, there is no flair in the direction this week, and certain scenes do seem to go on forever. Mm. There's a sense of nastiness in the story that is present in a few of Colin Baker's run. Violence on TV doesn't usually bother me, but it seems a little unnecessary here. That poor old blind woman never stood a chance. I do like the story, but it's too long, and the nasty, needless murder of Oscar sours it a little for me. Oh, and I'm glad the Sixth Doctor got to lose that coat for a while. 3 stars out of 5.
Okay.
Scene of the second Doctor being
Yes, he does say a certain W word, doesn't he, when he's sort of mumbling, doesn't he, just before he falls unconscious.
He says he shouts wank.
That's what I just said. Oh, for God's sake, Kirby.
For God's sake.
Tried to gloss over it. That failed dismally, didn't it? Okay, thank you, Kirby. We have some other feedback come through. Terry Miles says, hi, everybody, at the 20 Mug podcast. Here's my feedback for The Two Doctors. The Two Doctors was a very interesting story with a slight flaw. Why was it that Doctors John, Tom, Peter were not affected by the Androgram DNA? Maybe they will be in a Big Finish story one day. You never know. Look at the size of that thing, Doctor. I saw this one on first transmission and had forgotten about the fishing trip at the beginning. Once again, Nicholas Nork's trademark, Ben Shoveler, were on show throughout most of the show. No complaints here. Nice to see Serverland survive Blake 7, changed her name to Jacini and became Nasty Androgram. Jacqueline Pierce seemed to be typecast. Shame she was a lovely lady in real life. The Sontarans would never trust an ally the way these two did. They deserved to be killed so easily. Great advert for a holiday. The pictures of Spain showing how hot it is in summer. Shame you will now have to have 2 more weeks off when you get back. That's a reference to quarantine, everybody. This is a 2-disc DVD. On disc 1, there are 3 episodes of the show with an episode of Jim Will Fix It with an extra, which creeped me out watching it. It creeps me out even more now. But it's just, if you take out the Jimmy Savile part of it, it is fascinating that to see the Sixth Doctor with Tegan completely out of place. But, of course, it was just for fun.
I wonder what they'll do with the Blu-ray.
Hmm.
Oh, no, when you buy the DVD now, that's no longer on the DVD.
No longer on the DVD.
Sorry, it's on my DVD cherish that I got.
Oh, yeah. For
that. On disc 2, there are quite a lot of very informative extras. All in
Not
all,
really.
A much better episode than the earlier ones. To me, with this story, Colin became the Doctor. Everybody, stay safe.
Maybe it's the difference between when I bought my DVDs and the ones that are out now, but I've found very little on the second DVD was worth watching. It was mostly, this is all the filming of the outside stuff this for half an hour. This is all the filming of the inside stuff for half an hour with action and cut and move over there sort of thing.
I will say, when I used to buy the Doctor Who DVDs, I didn't used to watch the stories, just used to watch all the extras. It's only now that I'm actually watching the episodes, so that's quite useful that I actually bought them, apart from this particular story that I couldn't watch because, obviously I did originally watch it when we did the original review on it, but I've had to watch it via BritBox. Okay, so we've got this.
Podcast.
Hello,
this
Ian.
Is the other Ian. For the next series, the 13th Doctor could wear a space suit and meet creatures such as the Jadoon and Cybermen, so the actors could wear masks under their masks. The Two Doctors by Robert Holmes. Yes, it is a big one. It was all right, I expect. I fell asleep after episode 2. Perry's back on 20th century Earth. If this is before she left Earth, and she warns herself not to go to Lanzarote, would that create a paradox? Perry and Jamie meet some aliens, who insist they stay for dinner. Of the guest cast, only Anita makes it out alive. Shockeye is killed by the Doctor. The Doctor's epitaph could read, He hardly ever killed anyone.
Today, Southampton beat Sheffield United 3-1.
Yes.
Back for now.
Thank you for pointing that one out, Ian. Fantastic. I should have put in my own sports reference, but yes, it's the last the season. And yes, we finished 11th.
Adam,
yes, my darling.
Did you want to read Robert's feedback that he sent us
I'd like you to read Robert's feedback that he sent us, blah, 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 because I'm doing some technical stuff in the background. So if you wouldn't mind doing that, that would be very kind. Thank you.
Just scrolling back through, trying to find it. There we go. This is from Robert earlier today. I do love Two Doctors. When it was originally shown here, I didn't get to see it as we were on holiday. I did, however, tune into it on the radio. Don't ask me how the audio for the story ended up on the radio, but it did. So I only got to listen to one of the episodes. It took for the VHS release for me to finally see it. I love that it features the Second Doctor and Jamie, and it's not a story that's for any special occasion too, just an adventure. Even if it makes no sense, here's the Doctor talking about Time Lords when Jamie and Zoe first get to know and meet them in the War Games. Even then, they weren't referred to as Time Lords too. Tors and Torrens aside as well. Don't like the different look they've been given. The old masks look much better, same with costumes. But I feel for the poor actors in the hot sun. Just a good bit of a fun story. Troughton was clearly having fun. He was so entertaining as an Andragum. Gormand. There you go.
Thank you. Mary.
Yes, we've got the the Magna Carta here. From the
would you tag team in it? Do you want to send it to me as well, Adam?
Oh, the hell, that's never. We haven't tried that before.
I just quickly brought up the script for the War Games, and the Time Lords are referred to as Time Lords many, many times.
Yes, but not. Oh, good grief. Not until the first episode, the story of War Games, episode 10, was it, or 9? That's the first time there was a reference to the Time Lords, just saying. So, in basically, right at the end of the Doctor and Jamie's friendship. We're talking about sending you some blurb, weren't we, Debbie?
You sent it to Mary first.
It to Mary, and now I'm going to try and send it to you. What's your name again? Debbie, somebody or other, isn't it? Debbie. Melrose. Debbie Melrose.
Melrose.
Right, here it comes.
Melrose.
Ah, hi. Right, here we go.
Melrose.
What you had a new.
You now. How is this going to work? Sort of rehearsed tag on Alan T. Butcher's feedback. So good luck, girls. I'll leave
how
it to
about,
you.
How about Mary? You read the first long bit and then the second.
That's
short
what she
bit.
Said.
I'll read the second short bit and the second long bit. How does that sound?
I'm doing the first long bit and the second short bit, right?
And the first short bit. So if you read the long bit and then the short bit, and then I'll read the short bit, then the long bit, and that's it. If you get to the sentence, we learn that Johnny Ringo, that's where I take over.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Good luck.
All right. Santorin balls drop in Spain. Or a nasty case of the Botcherby. Send for the doctor and get a second opinion. Dear 20 megabiters, The Two Doctors is, of course, a closely studied presentation of a number of aspects of the question of the ethical treatment of other creatures. The superior way that the Time Lords are treating the third zoners sets up this taxonomy, and with the Andragums, we see this stratified to a classical upper, middle, and working class paradigm. Further, Shockeye's aspiration to anthropophagy in disregard for the sentience of the humans he encounters is obviously a comment upon the treatment of other animal life by humans. The rabidly xenophobic Suntarans add yet a further dimension to this, and in their disregard for any other form of life in a flat, unstratified racist attitude. By visiting Spain and featuring an actor, we also get hints at the nationalist and professional distinctions that can become parts of such prejudice, too. The rat and butterfly interludes hint at the fascination of inquiry that is sometimes shown even by those that exhibit prejudice and disregard for other forms of life. Finally, Chassini is the hybrid who can be seen to harness the augmented value taken from their origins when enhanced, but under social pressure, may be placed into some dilemma by an arbitrary but very real crisis of identity. It should be noted that whilst some suggest this story is a bit all over the place, they are, of course, out of their minds. Robert Holmes remain a past master of the Doctor Who story and negotiates his way to sustain the longer form story by intertwining separate elements into an effortless whole.
So where do you come in then, Debbie?
We also learn that Johnny Ringo escaped the OK Corral and took up science. We thought we were going to be seamless there, Mary, honestly. OK Corral and took up scientific research under the name Dastari, but fell in with a bad lot with a mutant super tall Sontar and Hatchling. Also, Severland did survive Blake and his eponymated team going on to become a part of the Franzine Greek and learning a new nickname because of her incessant chess playing in pursuit of strategizing. All in all, The Two Doctors is varied and interesting story in the finest tradition of the programme. The Second Doctor and Jamie would always be welcomed, and whilst the way in which they are crowbarred in here lacked any real thought or consistency, this of course allowed the creativity inherent in our favourite show to operate in summoning a Season 6B theorem into existence. Colin Baker provides an exuberant performance and clearly delights in having the Second Doctor and Jamie to play off whilst he can. It is remarkable how well Nicola Bryant holds her own in such august company. That's what she said. The realisation of the Sontarans here is certainly subpar and certainly cruel in the Spanish climate, but they are a relatively slight part of the plot. This story is perhaps 4 episodes too short, as we would obviously love Patrick Troughton and Fraser Hines to stick around for the rest of the season, series or year. Next up, Doctor Who and the Wells of Time take a lashing, or they say it's a load of borads. Those are my thoughts, Alan T. Butcher.
Yes, thank you, Alan. All right.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you, Alan.
All right, let's see if somebody said anything
else.
Thank
you, Alan.
All right, thank you, Kirby.
Thank you, Kirby.
Thank you, Kirby.
Rob Event Studio says, I wanted to ask everyone, how does this compare to the Three Doctors and the Five Doctors? That's a good question. Well, I'd put this... I think this being as long as it is would have felt better with the Three Doctors, because I enjoy the Three Doctors better than I enjoy the Five Doctors, and I personally would order it, and you won't agree with me, as the Three Doctors first, then this, and then the Five Doctors. I certainly feel this is a better multiple Doctor story than the Five Doctors. I think the Five Doctors just got wrapped up in itself, whereas this is a proper story.
Sacrilege.
No, I'm saying that's how I feel about it. So what do you think? If you said it's sacrilege, then Kirby, what do you think?
Well, to me, the Five Doctors is one of my favorite stories of all time. I mean, I said it back when we did that one. It's just, I just absolutely adore it.
Okay. Anybody else?
I love the Three Doctors as well. And we know what I thought of the Two Doctors.
Okay. So, what do you think, Debbie? What do you think of the order of...
I agree with you, actually, Adam.
You're agreeing with me, that's right. Hang on. Yeah, where's the bell? Here it is. Well, I found the bell, look.
I was thinking about this earlier. Oh. I really did enjoy this very much, but... Yeah, the dynamic of the Three Doctors would have been perfect in this story. So, yeah, if we could have moved it around a bit, it would have made absolutely sumptuous viewing. So, yeah, agree with you.
What do you think, Mary?
I liked the Five Doctors. Mm. I sort of liked the Three Doctors. I really did not like this one, if that's
Yay!
All that
comes. We agree again.
Well, Ian's been down 5-3-2. Is that your lottery numbers for this week, Ian?
5, 2, and 3. Huh. The Five Doctors, the Two Doctors, and then the Three Doctors.
Oh, Three Doctors at the bottom then.
Yes.
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it wasn't a big favorite for me either, but this one falls below that.
The Three Doctors is really only the Two Doctors and Hartnell on the busy screen.
Yeah.
It's interesting to note, though, Ian, that Hartnell's in a contraption that's very similar to the wibbly-wobbly triangular-shaped thing that's in this story.
That's how they were getting him in there. They shoved him in a car driver module.
Yes, exactly. Alan T. Butcher says, my long bits and short bits are being shared out. That's what she said. He said, thank you for 20 megabytes. And then we've already mentioned Ian's spoiler for his order of multiple Doctor stories. But there is another load of multiple Doctor stories, which I think falls above all of them. Well, particular story, and that is the Time of the Doctor. Is it the Time of the Doctor? Day of the Doctor. The one where...
Whatever the 50th anniversary
yeah,
was.
Yeah, that is better than the other three. It's just obviously there was no chance of getting Troughton back for that one. And, of course, one that is probably the better out of the whole lot is the spoof one, which is the Five-ish Doctor's reboot.
Five-ish Doctor's reboot.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Oh. Sue bloody perb.
But that's not really a multiple Doctor story.
Yes, no, it isn't, but it's a spoof multiple Doctor. But that is the best of the spoof. Well, for me, it's the best.
It's got Colin Baker. It's got Sylvester McCoy. It's got
Paul McGann.
They're not the Doctor.
They're dressed up like the Doctor.
I like myself.
At what point are we not getting this effect that it's like it's three actors who have played the Doctor dressed up like the Doctor in a show that says Doctor?
Yeah, now you, no, you mentioned
what
that. What
are you missing here, Kirby?
I'm off work for 18 days. Well, I must watch that.
I do like the Five-ish Doctors better than Day of the Doctor, but I still like Day of the Doctor very much.
And, of course, there's another... multiple Doctor story involving the 12th Doctor and the 1st Doctor.
Oh, that was just on the last Christmas.
Yeah, which isn't too bad. But it still falls behind the Time of the Doctor, the 50th anniversary special, and the Five-ish Doctor's reboot. But moving on, Robert Vence Jr. says his order is 5-3-2. So there you go.
It would have been interesting if they'd put three Doctors into this story, because then the Androgum Inheritance, which I think is an awful and an awesome name for the episode, which they didn't use, you would have seen it progress through into the next Doctor, and then as it approaches our Doctor,
So
if they had Davison in there or Baker or something like that, it would have been really cool, because then they would have slowly turned into an Androgum.
Yeah, I don't know much of the history behind what Robert Holmes wrote originally for the Five Doctors, but I know he took some of that story and put it into the two Doctors.
Okay. Which leaves us to moving on to Doctor Who news. Before we move on to Doctor Who news, I think we'll do a little bit of Fantasy Con news. We've got a guest announcement came up this week.
Yay! Is
Craig Fairbrass, who has been in some stuff.
He's one of those great, hey, it's that guy.
Hey?
He's a great, hey, it's that guy.
Yeah, he's been in lots. I mean, Mary will recognise him from EastEnders from several years ago, Cliffhanger. He's the actual star of lots of independent British movies. He's very good at playing tough men. A very good actor, I have to say. I've just reviewing some snippets of his work. He's an incredible actor. So quite excited to have him come along. So essentially we've got a film star to come along with our band of guests. Have I missed anybody, Deb, that has been announced since the last...
I don't think so. He's the only one I saw since the last
time. We already mentioned Michelle Collins, but I've got a special exclusive for the listeners and viewers of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. Vilile Shabalala is coming back next year. I had personal request directly to her, and she said directly to me, yes. But I had to just put it by Matty Rose, who said yes. So, yes, Vilile's coming back, and I know that's going to please an awful lot of people.
Tom especially.
My
husband gone for the weekend.
There's a couple of other people that haven't announced yet. There's a chap who lives on the Isle of Wight. Who's coming? He's the body double for Woody Harrelson, and he lives on the Isle of Wight. He's coming along. I'm just going to see if I can get his name. I do apologise for this. Doctor Who news. There isn't any. Apart from this new independent comic set in the Doctor Who universe, Cutaway Comics is an independent comic imprint based in Manchester. It's launching a new comic series featuring worlds and characters from Doctor Who. I presume they've got the go-ahead from the BBC. Doctor Who Time Lord Victorious panel at Comic-Con. So this is the... is that San Diego Comic-Con? Ooh, that's interesting.
Yes, that's where it is.
Yeah, the... It has been announced that there will be a Doctor Who Time Lord Victorious panel at San Diego Comic Con taking place
already.
Online. Has it?
Yeah, watch it on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. It's on YouTube. Well, that's a good little plug for that one. Time Lord Victorious, of course, is it's a figurine collection. I'll talk about figurine collections. B&M have released another amazing set of Doctor Who figures, which people are snapping up left, right and centre. There's a set of the Fourth Doctor's Companions, which I doubt still exists in the shop now, which are beautifully made.
Into B&M.
Eh?
I never get into Newport anymore, so I don't get to see these.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the only set I managed it, because it's £25 for a set. The one I got was the Eighth Doctor and TARDIS. Eighth Doctor and Dalek from the Big Finish story that it relates to. So I got that one because I wanted an Eighth Doctor figure that didn't look like the one from the movie. But that's still in its box. I haven't taken it out of its box. But yeah, so lots of really good stuff coming up through B&M. That's about now, it for Doctor Who news.
This won't. I mean, you released this a couple of days after we record.
Mm-hmm.
But today, Eve Miles is 42.
Mm-hmm. See me? Yeah, I'm the only set I managed to get because it's £25.
Why can I hear myself?
Yes, you can hear yourself. Yeah.
What am I going to hear myself? That's weird.
Maybe we should do our sponsors before you disappear completely.
I am going to do that, but I just wanted to get the name of the chap that's...
Bob Baker is 81 today.
And Olivia de Havilland passed away at the age of 104.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. When I was a young lad, I used to like watching Olivia de Havilland in films, so I just thought she was so beautiful. Just thought I'd say that. Right, let's have a look.
I felt the same about Rex Harrison.
I didn't feel that way about Rex Harrison, to be fair. Right, that's what we got. It's Chris Beard is the chap. He's a Woody Harrelson's picture double. And he's actually got poster pictures of himself with Woody. So that's quite a good claim to fame, isn't it? He's coming along to FantasyCon. We might be doing some events with a shop in Newport called Rembrandt Gallery. They've got another name as well in relation to autographs, so we'll see how that pans out. So that's about it. You said about sponsors.
Is there an Altport besides the new
Kirby? Who are the sponsors then?
Is that whowon.co.uk?
Well, that's what I was asking you. You answered a question with this question. Yes. Fourth Doctor 9.3 Shadow of the Sun is a Big Finish production, along with Donna Noble Kidnap. We talked about this last week, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Coming soon is always quite interesting. Oh, Graham O'Brien figure, posable action figure. So it's basically a bendy Graham wearing a very sort of un-Graham-like costume in the figure, to be fair. Yeah, a Renaissance Dalek, which is really quite cool. I've got the Renaissance Dalek Funko Pop, but this is more of sort of accurate rendition. So, yeah, that's a few of the items you can get from whowon.co.uk, lavazi.co.uk. What?
Yes.
Whowon.co.uk?
You're not allowed to do it twice.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not. Sorry, the dog's fidgeting, and I think I almost had a load of VHS tapes collapse on top of her then, because I've got a very... somebody delivered 40 VHS tapes to convert to DVD. It's taking forever. Right then, yeah, so along with the Doctor Who merchandise you can get from Lavazzi and Star Trek merchandise, you can get women's scarves, pashminas, anyway, them, and gloves. Obviously, this time of year, you're not going to be looking at these sort of items, but just think it's not that far away till we have to start wearing more clothes and stuff. And if you're in the other end of the world, it's winter anyway. And we've got IWM map scarves, they're quite cool. You've got Omaha Beach map scarf. You've got World War II collectible scarf like a map of some World War II thingy. And a silk map scarf from the Imperial War Museum. So that's some really good stuff there, along with the usual garb. Amazing Doctor Who merchandise that you can get from Lavazzi. So that covers that. Next week... we are going to be reviewing Time Lash. Now, I've always stated that I actually really enjoyed Time Lash. So I think we're going to be arguing next week. We're going to be doing a Sixth Doctor and Perry episode next week.
Yeah, no, I have no opinion because I haven't seen it.
I love this episode.
Alan T. Butcher says 3 day Sorry. 5 twice 2, and then he says 3 day 5 twice 2 again. Just to reiterate, I suppose, that's the order of multiple Doctor stories. Of course, on Big Finish, there's a copious quantity of multiple Doctor stories. Mary will have to go through those ones at some point in the future to decide what the best order of multiple Doctor stories are on Big Finish. Robert Vench Jr. says, Gone with the Wind may be banned because of what's going on there. Well, the funny thing is, the black actress who is in Gone with the Wind won an Oscar, did she not, for her performance?
Yes, she did, I think.
Yes, she did. So there's no reason to ban it. It is of its time. It's basically historical. So, unfortunately...
her name is Annie McDaniel.
Yeah, she's a legend. And unfortunately, of the time they're depicting, there was racism going on. Why are they going to take Rosa off the Doctor Who thread because it's a story about racism? That doesn't make sense to me. We have to remember that racism occurred and people were nasty to people. Otherwise, people will forget about it and do it again. It's got to be recorded and spoken about.
People are doing it now. There are countries in which slavery is still, very much alive.
Absolutely. You can't just turn your back on stuff because it hurts and offends people. People have got to be offended for things to be done. Anyway. So next week, Time Lash, everybody. Time Lash. You're going to enjoy it. And you haven't watched it, Kirby.
Love Time Lash.
Kirby?
Time Lash.
Kirby, you haven't watched Time Lash yet?
Master is trying to say something to me and I missed it.
Yeah, but now you know what it's like.
Sorry, what?
Oh, brilliant. Right then, Kirby, have you watched Time Lash? You said you hadn't.
I have not seen Time Lash.
Has anybody else not seen Time Lash? Oh, that's just you then, Kirby.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, this is going to be fun, isn't it?
Oh, I heard you.
All right then, everybody. So thanks.
Every single one from now on.
Yes. Oh, hang on. Robert Vench Jr. said, "Yes, she did." I was talking about that Oscar for the actress that I mentioned. Okay, so next time, Time Lash. Thank you for listening, watching, and taking part in the show. See you then. Goodbye.
Bye. Goodbye, fancy pants.
Bye. Bye.
The 20MB Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.